Predictions with John Hoag. We'll take a few of your calls this hour as well when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with the Prophecies of John Hoag. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're even going to squeeze him for a Super Bowl pick a little bit later on in the. I'm concerned, John, this year about Iran. I don't know why, but I feel that way. How about you?
Yes, it's the conception of a war plan is something that Nostradamus talks about. In fact, he talks quite in the clear about Iran as really the point, the focal point of any major war in the Middle East, that it has global significance. And he even mentions a naval incident off the Kamara, which was the name of the Iranian side of the Strait of Hormuz. He talks about fleets being melted and sunk in the Arabian Gulf, which is what it was called, the Persian Gulf in those days in 16th century. One of the big factors that brings us to a greater danger is that in my book, The Great American Eclipse, I talked about how plans could be set in motion in August in America that would, the year following, cause there to be a war. We're now in the countdown of the last 120 days. 12th of June is when the president may decide to either extend or the sanction timeout or walk away from the deal, which would then bring us a few months into that August-September window. The other key factor in this is a significant new candidate for Nostradamus' third Antichrist that has emerged as the crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia.
I was wondering if that his name was going to come up.
Oh, it's you know, just when I was thinking, both with Iran and with the Mabus issue, which I've been studying for 25 years, like a detective, I thought, well, maybe we dodged the bullet on those two. But here, after all these major candidates, Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, here we have a candidate that actually is the most formidable. He is the number one arms purchaser of the United States and the United Kingdom. He is waging a brutal war against the Yemenis that hardly anybody hears about, and it kind of fits the statement of Nostradamus about this man. It is this prophecy, it's quatrain 60 of century 3. Back in 1555, he made this statement. He said, throughout Asia, great prohibiting of outlaws, which are these terrorists, that's a link to other stuff he talks about, even in Mysia, Lucia, and Pamphylia. Those are areas of Asia Minor and Kurdistan and Iran and Iraq. He says, blood will flow because of the absolving of a young, dark man filled with evil doing. If Muhammad bin Salman, who has been groomed by his sickly father, who's suffering strokes and...
Right. And bypassed brothers, right?
Yes. Well, not only that, there was a major purge that dropped out, crowded out the crown prince that had other family ties to the direct bloodline of the current king. The plan is that the crown prince will become the king, and the current king will then become his advisor, sort of like in the scenes from the Bruce in Braveheart.
Braveheart, yeah.
And that this man will be 33 years old when he becomes king. He will be one of the youngest Arabian kings in history.
He's still got some billionaire Saudis held up either at the Ritz or now Alawid, for example, is now in jail.
And not only that, he has also arrested and sequestered the people who oversaw royal protocol, oversaw the media, oversaw the major construction, oversaw the Air Force, the Army. It was a purge that happened late this year and also in around August of last year, late in the last year this all happened. And he has set the stage to stifle a coup d'etat of the 3,000 princes by putting himself in a position to become king.
Right.
And he is the one responsible for a lot of the craziness that's happened since King Abdullah died. The financing of Al-Qaeda and ISIS to fight against Syria, the the weird situation with oil that's trying to destroy fracking industries in the United States. It's kind of a global oil war. That's all. And then this outrageous war, which he felt would last for 2 months, and now it's 2 years in Yemen. He's draining the coffers. So he's got the weapons, he's got the political backing of Israel and America as a triumvirate against Iran, and it's really a power play to take over. These three are trying to vie for control of the region. And with this prophecy, it's simply saying that he's absolved. He's absolved by, I would say, the West and leaders who look the other way at the incredible crimes. I mean, right now, as many as 7 million people, including 400,000 children, are at the verge of dying of starvation in Yemen because he's completely cut off and blockaded the northern Yemenis in their civil war. There's the biggest cholera epidemic in history, is not hardly even talked about in the news. And American jets, American fueling jets, are regularly fueling the Saudi Air Force in its bombings of hundreds of schools, hundreds of hospitals, freshwater systems. It's a war of genocide. It's the biggest war in the world right now. It's hardly even being
No,
talked about.
nobody's talking about it. So are you saying he's the third Antichrist or a possible one?
He's a possible candidate. I've seen now this will make the seventh candidate since I've been looking at this since the mid 1980s, the seventh major
Are
candidate.
some still alive?
No, well, yes, I guess because two of the candidates are actually people who were drawn into the Middle East who are not from the Middle East, and that was President Bush and President Obama. Their names also translate into the enigma Mabus, Mabus. Bin Salman also follows the laws of anagram. I mean, if people want to see that, it's tedious to go through it on a radio, but you just go to hogueprophecy.com and see that information there, how these things decode. And so Osama bin Laden of Al-Qaeda was one major candidate. Al-Baghdadi, the caliph of Islamic State, was another. And Saddam Hussein was another of the major candidates. But this one has got my hackles up more than anyone else because he could be the catalyst of drawing America into fighting a war for other people's interests that would be the first disastrous war of overreach of a declining empire, and it would be against Iran.
Interesting take. Bitcoins took a dive today.
Yes.
Just a huge dive. What do you think?
Well, it's back to its more realistic number of 10,000, hovering around 10,000. And it's the Wild West. Here again is an odd thing. I don't even, frankly, understand what cryptocurrency, how it works, except that in my field, oracularly, I'm told that this rather Wild West version of turning mathematics into wealth is the beginning of something that might, in several years to 10 years, completely eclipse the fiat economy that we currently have, and be the basis with gold and other precious metals of a new kind of multifaceted economic system.
Midterm elections, without being too political, major change.
To put it short, I'm just about finishing a book this weekend where I'll go. It's the final essay of the 10 major predictions for the year, and it's some very interesting astrology. But what I'll simply say is this: it's a struggle between the forces of Saturn, conservatism, with Uranus, a desire for change and surprises, and they're both rooted in Earth. And when that happens, usually it means that all the talk in the other air and fire signs, when it gets into Earth, it's like, let's talk turkey, let's talk change. But what I see happening on the date of 6th November, what I see is it's very likely the Democrats will win the Senate back, and they could even win the House.
Yes, that's possible.
But it'll just be paper thin.
Well, it doesn't have to be much.
Well, except that it's more of the same since the mid-90s in a way. It's like, because there's no 60 majority in the Senate, because there's no, I mean, you can get 24 seats in the House, and what I hope will happen is, and I see this possibility with the unpredictability of Uranus against the stasis quo of things, is that there are going to be probably more independents free of the Republican and Democratic Party that might end up in such a tight situation being the kind of wedge, even if it's only two or three people, that could get perhaps the House and the Senate to work together more, because there's just not enough of a majority for them to get their agenda through. And I don't even rule out the possibility that even if the Democrats take back the Congress, I wrote in my first Trump book that I saw in Trump's astrology that being that he's adaptable and a surprise with Uranus in his sun, he might actually get more war going with the Democrats. If the Democrats are running the show, he'll do deals with them. And it could be very positive.
You see anything on the horizon for extraterrestrial revelations this year?
Yeah, there's something that happened in July, and it was kind of shrugged off as a signal that was coming from about 11 light years to Ross 128, a red dwarf, and was picked up by the Arecibo dish in Puerto Rico, and just around the time when they were trying to triangulate a couple other large radar dishes, in came Hurricane Maria and the disruption a few weeks earlier of Irma, Hurricane Irma, and it basically, that dish is now down. It's got electricity to run it, but not to turn the dish. So there was the astronomers were saying it could have been a geostationary satellite near the equator where the source was, but the signature, they said, was not something just out a few thousand miles. It was like it really had a signature of a signal, an interesting signal coming from light years away. And in the meantime, while that system was down, a new terrestrial planet in the Goldilocks zone was discovered as the second planet known to orbit close around this little red dwarf star. And so if that is the source of this planet, that's the size of Earth, it's terrestrial, we don't know yet if it has water on it, but if we do discover that there's water on it, who knows? This might actually be a real tangible, grounded potential for an extraterrestrial evidence.
John, we're going to take a few calls, and then we'll take the rest of the calls when we come back in just a moment on our last half. But we have been getting blasted by cold air lately. I mean blasted. I was in St. Louis for the holidays, got down to below 7. Back in L.A. now where it's nice and 70. But what the heck's going on?
Well, it's a pattern that I've been forecasting for 25 years. Sounds very counterintuitive, but it's what happens when the oceans begin to warm. Do you know that climate change is blocking what usually escapes into space, enough heat in the oceans and the atmospheres to light off 400,000 Hiroshima atom bombs a year?
That's a lot.
It's not getting out in space. It's being blocked by carbon clouds and stuff, and so it's heating up the oceans. And what's done in the Pacific, in the northern Pacific, is it's heating it up to a point where it's weakening and flattening the polar vortex Arctic jet stream, and which is now bleeding storms into the east and south of the United States.
I know. They're not stopping one after the other.
Yeah, but guess what's going to happen, what happened in the first one in January? It got unseasonably warm the next week, and guess what's going to happen next week after this current blast? It's going to get in the 70s in some areas. There even Weather Channel today was worried that there might be major tornado outbreaks.
Yeah, because of all the weather changes.
So it's... And this is also happening in a La Nina cycle, which makes me concerned for the hurricane season that might be pretty strong. And especially, I would say, watch out and be prepared in Tornado Alley, and especially in the south, because I think the things are lining up in the future that would, with the climate, that might see a like the great outbreaks of 2011 maybe repeated. I hope not, but. So be watchful, everybody in the south. It could start around April, a dramatic warming after these storms come with their record-breaking cold. It could also get back into being record-breaking hot, because that is the majority temperatures that are being broken around the world. We've had the last 3 years, the three hottest years in temperature records in history in the last 3 years, and this third year, 2017, was during in a La Nina, which should kind of a neutral year, and it's now even though it's third, it's the hottest year of any neutral year in climate recorded history. So and I can tell you here in the Seattle area, we have been unseasonably warm. A few days ago, it felt like March 15th, and the buds are already starting to come on the trees.
And then bang.
So I'm afraid to say that warmth is winning this one so far, not a future ice age, but a future hot age.
Let's go to Ed in Tulsa, Oklahoma now to start our calls. Ed, go ahead.
Appreciate it, George. Sure. John, listen, I just wanted to run something past you. You mentioned something about the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. Let me see if you're aware of this. The Japanese were working under the code of Bushido, okay? Suicide. Kamikaze pilots flying against our surface ships. Even over there in the islands that we were invading, these islands, the Japanese citizens were just marching off into the sea. They were willing to fight to the death, every man, woman, and child. Now, here's the thing, and I don't know how many people are aware of this, but the Japanese Imperial Army and Japanese Imperial Navy and the Nazi Germans were working on the atomic weaponry, okay? Now, they were also working on a long-range bomber that could have reached the United States had the war went on.
But it shows that they were very behind.
They were behind, yes. But now
they were going to have the atomic bomb. The heavy water production in Germany was bombed.
Absolutely.
And the cyclotrons that the Japanese were dumping, I mean, at the end of the war, the cyclotrons that they showed, they were not even close.
They would have used Bushido.
Oh, sure they would have, yeah.
Absolutely. And they estimated 4 million Japanese citizens would have died if we had invaded the island of Japan, and 2 million of our guys would have died. I mean, yeah. They were vicious fighters.
But that's the myth. It doesn't matter, really, what people think might have happened. What was actually happened, and this is documented in the records of the Japanese government, and also in our own, is the Japanese were seeking through back channels a surrender to the United States 6 months before September 2nd, when the war ended. And it is also, if you just look beyond what people say and just look at the evidence, the Japanese were more concerned about Russia taking over and dividing the country.
Well, they were petrified of the Russians.
They were more terrified of that than they were of the atomic bomb, because frankly, after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there wasn't any more cities to bomb. And you just look at the firebombing of Ernest LeMay's firebombing program. There wasn't anything left. So.
And those were industrial cities too, weren't they?
Well, they were, but they were hardly bombed. They were the only two that were hardly bombed, and unfortunately, a whole lot of, just like what happened with Dresden, which was not considered a high military target, a whole lot of U.S. POWs, a whole lot of other refugees from the firebombings of other places crowded in those two cities.
That's true. John, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment just ahead with John Hogue as we take your calls and talk prophecy for 2018. Welcome to Coast, John Hogue with us here, and let us go back to the calls. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Go ahead, Thomas.
My call, John, your centered approach on prediction is very appreciated. My question, John, is about other than North Korea, in the next 5 years, do you see the possibility of a limited nuclear exchange? It just seems that nuclear launch and nuclear proliferation is now back on the table. For example...
Well, yes, I'll answer your... I'll give you the prediction about that. Yes, it's very likely. More likely than even during the Cold War, because what is missing in the Cold War that I grew up in is people who... If you said, like, some of the things that major people in our government have said and written about the possibility of winning nuclear wars, if you had wrote or said that in the governments that were in the depths of the Cold War, you would have been put in a straitjacket and put away. The time that has gone by since atomic weapons were used has been so long, and the people are forgetting. That's what makes prophecy repetitive. It people forget their lessons, and there is a very high danger of nuclear weapons being used between Pakistan and India, in the situation in North Korea. But especially the most important danger is the one that people least expect, and that is the one that could happen because now we're in Cold War 2.0 with the Russians. And it's possible, with the prophecies that I looked at in a new Cold War book I wrote in 2014 and introduced early on with George on Coast to Coast, where I said this is the beginning of danger of the countdowns of Nostradamus towards a thermonuclear war that a lot of prophets saw of World War III that happens with no one expecting it would happen. It just suddenly blossoms out of nowhere. And with open eyes, people would walk into these catastrophes. One of the ways that you have open eyes walking blind is if you have a news industry that is fomenting stuff that isn't actually true and getting everybody ready for such a war. And you have people who are under the delusion that they can win a thermonuclear war.
John, as you look at everything that has gone on, will go on, could go on, what scares you the most about 2018?
Wow. Well, I don't live in fear. That's why I can, and I don't live in being stuck in one ideology or another. So, but I can say that certainly what concerns me the most is a world where journalism is not doing its job to show both sides, and education is not doing its job to make people critical thinkers. There's also the danger that we do not, many people that are listening to this show probably never had a civics class in high school because a lot of them have been disappearing for 24 years. And so the danger is that we could, there's two major dangers that are in front of us. And one, of course, is war, thermonuclear war that could happen from misunderstandings or projections of fake news. And which I gotta admire Trump for saying it, putting it out there in the middle of everything. Right or wrong, there's a truth to it. And I've been in the journalism for so long that there's a lot of fakery in journalism, but now it's kind of out in the air, and that could be a good thing. That could eventually make us a little more critical in our thinking. So the threat of nuclear war, but the other threat that's much bigger is of planetary climate change. It's something I've been watching and studying since 1973. And I've been studying it longer than a lot of your listeners have been alive. And I have seen the changes, and I'm also seeing that the general human response to this so far is to either speed up global warming or kind of hug each other in a kumbaya agreement, which has no teeth and no power, the Paris Accord. It's an appeasement of our dangerous future. I do hold hope that just like the 80-year cycles work, that we were in a planetary disaster with fascism and fought World War II, got to it too late when we could have prevented it much earlier, but we fixed it, that we're going to come into this dangerous situation with the climate also too late, but it will bring the world together. And out of this conflict, we will have a completely different civilization by the mid-20s, 21st century.
Next up, we go to Joe of the Bronx. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, Joe.
Hi. I'd like to ask John, with the midterm elections coming up, and if the Democrats do gain an advantage over the Republicans, how probable or possible would a call for impeachment be? And also, what are the chances that President Trump can get the wall and infrastructure, underway before his first term ends?
Well, I think that the first term will resolve whether the wall happens or not. And we're probably going to have a shutdown coming, but I was looking at the astrology, and it looks like the shock of the shutdown might actually bring another opportunity for negotiation. I've always felt that in the end, everybody's going to have to come to a similar program that George W. Bush actually considered to resolve this issue of immigration. The midterm elections, the problem that I see for the Democrats is that they are a party of anything but Trump, and what they need to be is a party of other choices for the American people. And I do not see a galvanization of anyone currently in the Democratic Party that's really taking that up, except for potentially Oprah Winfrey.
You think she's got a shot?
Well, I was looking at her astrology. One of the 10 prophecies that I look at, I call it the POW effect. President Oprah Winfrey, POW effect. And I use that double entendre on purpose because looking at her chart, she and Trump have a lot in common in that in a world where politics is about celebrity, only a celebrity can potentially beat another celebrity, a celebrity that we've known since the 80s, just like Trump, a celebrity that is a billionaire, just like Trump, a celebrity that has kind of our kids have grown up and watched them, both of them. They're both reality masters of reality TV, and they harness the emotions of enough people, in the case of Trump, to win. But what I see in her astrology as an Aquarius is that she is also quite an independent person. She brings into the mix an independent optimism that, depending on the tenor of the times, because this is very important with prophecy, it's one thing to ask if somebody's going to make it or not, but if the times are changed and they're unwilling, then it won't happen. But if we have a situation where the economy is reaching a fiat end of the fiat era, and we're in levels of economic crisis in the next few years, I could see, as Ronald Reagan was, Trump was the karmic echo of Ronald Reagan, the karmic echo that Oprah Winfrey could be is Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the optimist. Her chart is that of optimism. Certainly, she is an absolutely gifted orator. And she also might ride on what is happening, partially for what she catalyzed at the Golden Globes, her speech for women. The movement of women to empowerment may very well ride her over in 2020 to the presidency. I don't think at the moment that she's...
I don't think she's interested at this point.
Well, she is actually interested. It's interesting that she's mulling it over because she kind of made these statements, kind of smiling knowingly to herself on TV a few times that, I don't know politics. I don't think I'm experienced enough and all this. And then she kind of went, but then look what's happened, which was like saying a million things in one little phrase about how somebody like her, a celebrity who doesn't know much about politics, is now president of the United States. And the way she looked and her body language said to me, she's seriously considering it. I know her partner, Stedman, is very interested in it. I could see his steely eyes when she was making that speech. But the thing that's going to be difficult for them is their private life. She's a very independent and unorthodox person in independence. They have a relationship which is two individuals who are not, I don't think they're married. And I don't know how that's going to go over in middle America.
Well, that's a good point. Now, here's a quick question that we'll take final calls. Is there a Republican out there who could topple Donald Trump?
No, I don't see any.
Nothing.
No, it's not a single one.
All right. Mike in Toronto, welcome to the show. Michael, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year.
You too, Mike.
I have a quick question. It's a bit of a deviation from your presidential talks here. I truly believe that our future involves around with the pyramids and with the Sphinx. I just wanted to ask John, was Nostradamus aware of the sacred information those structures and those ancient symbols represent for the future of humanity? And I'll take my question off the line. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Not that I can see the ancient Egyptian ideas. I mean, he did try to write a book of Egyptian. It was called Oris Apollo, and it tried to take a certain Egyptian prophecies using symbols of animals and other things, but it's not really related to the dimensions, the prophetic dimensions of the pyramids.
Next up, we've got Brian in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Good morning. How are you?
Good, Brian. Thank you.
Hey, I've been waiting all week to hear John, and I had 10,000 questions, but I decided on this one.
All right.
I'll make it quick, and I'll take my answer off the air. Okay, John, how are you? I'm a middle age. I'll be 56 years old next month.
I'm in my 63rd year.
Okay, I have a couple of retirement accounts that I've taken 15 years to build up, well over $200,000. I want to retire in the next 9 years when I'm 65. My question revolves around the millennials running this country in my lifetime. And when I mean running the country, I mean they're gonna vote in these people on the hard left. And my political view is a couple of ticks right of center. But yet I'm a white, middle-aged American, hard-working taxpayer. But the hatred and discontent for people like me is starting to show its face as with the election of Donald Trump. And I'm a deplorable. I'm all in for Donald Trump. But what advice or what do you see in the future if the millennials, once they gain control of this country?
Okay. Well, the millennials, thank you for your question. And the millennials are have two potentials. One thing that's going to happen is they're going to get older, and they're going to get more mellowed out from being so left and become more centrist. The other thing that they're dealing with is a need for some kind of common ground with other Americans about economic reforms that can give them a future, because a lot of them are going to be under the debt of their college debt for the rest of their lives. So that has to change to free them up. The other possibility, which I'm seeing more and more is not so much the case, is still a potential, and that is just give me my phone, just give me my my games, and then run the country is kind of a danger, which I quoted from Strauss and Howe from their Fourth Turning book and the New Millennial book that they did. They're the people who coined the term New Millennials or Millennials. The danger always with the millennial generation is that they might acquiesce and surrender to a more totalitarian situation because they just don't want to deal with it. But that's the dark potential. The other potential is that they are becoming more socially active. They are becoming more economically active because their future is going to be some of the most challenging decades of human history. So I think sometimes the situation of history makes the man and the woman, and people in another more mellifluous, sweet time may not do much, but I think they might surprise us, the millennials.
John, as we wrap things up, what's the latest book that's coming out?
Well, I'm by this weekend, I hope, and I have it up at hopeprophecy.com, the 10 prophecies and the essay overviews, is going to be called Predictions 2018 plus the midterm election forecast. And it's going to be out this weekend, but I've managed now to put almost all the last books of the last year into print at Amazon paperback.
Oh, you did.
And
okay.
Also in Lulu. So I'm in paper, everybody. I've had a lot of people asking. So go to my website and you'll see all the ways that you can engage all that.
Super. Up next, 200th anniversary of Frankenstein.